Good afternoon, everybody. It's Joe Varnador. Hope everybody has had a very productive week so far. Been good for me. Have been sick a couple of days, but other than that, doing very well. Glad to be back home in Florida from being in Milwaukee for a week. It's certainly better to have the weather here than it is up there. So, I've been up north pretty much all year so far this year, and so we're doing a class, a three-day class up in Minneapolis this weekend. So the crew is headed up there, so hopefully it'll be pretty cold up there as well. All right, we've got some good content today, some good questions, some things we're going to go over. Let's see. I'm going to get Stu and Tina, and we're going to do this one for Stu and Tina first. So I'm going to unmute these guys. Hey, Stu. Hey, Tina.
Hi, Joe.
Hi, Joe.
How are you guys?
Well, I'm getting over cataract surgery from yesterday, but that's fine.
Right. So can you see okay, or is it still kind of foggy? Oh.
No, I could see right away. I was just simply amazed.
She's just normally foggy.
Well, thanks. You know what? She would probably say that's your fault, Stu.
Yeah, no, it went well, so we're happy with it.
Very good. So let's talk about, I think we talked about this a few weeks ago as well. So let's, in your words, let's talk about your question, and then let's kind of go through it and see if we can expand on this so that everybody will have a pretty clear understanding how this works. So basically your question was, how can we charge a fee when we're helping somebody set up seller financing? So let's give me a scenario, and then let's kind of talk through this and I'll tell you the official Note School policy on that as well. So talk to me about that.
Okay. What we've got is a lady that we met at Reeves in Everett, I think it was. And she has a house that she's working on at a rehab. And what she wants to do is to put a note on it and season it for 6 months and then probably sell the note.
Right.
So she was asking us about the note. So we told her we could help her with it.
Right.
Our question, Joe, was regarding the creation of that note in mm-hmm. helping her do that, and what would be an advisable fee to do that. And you had indicated that you thought perhaps 1% and then having an interest later to be have first right of refusal to buy the note.
Right.
And so, but then later, we thought we understood from Eddie that we shouldn't be doing that we shouldn't be charging a fee. So we were just wanting some clarification,
right,
as whether we understood that correctly or not. And we thought we had understood that.
I understand. So we kind of got together over the week, Eddie and Kevin and myself and a few of us, and we were kind of talking this through. And so if you're dealing directly with the buyer, and the buyer is going to be an owner occupant. Okay, that's going to be their house, that's going to be their homestead, and all of that. Now, remember, I said if you're dealing with the buyer. So,
right.
We think that, you know, that could be probably part of the SAFE Act, part of Dodd-Frank. So if you're dealing with the buyer only, trying to help them buy a house using seller financing, that's really not something that you should try to charge the borrower for. You're going to send a borrower to an RMLO, and the RMLO is then going to charge them to qualify them or to go through the process of making sure that, you know, their debt to income, their credit, their job verification, their income all of that is good. Now, if you're dealing with the seller, only, and you're advising the seller as to how to create a good note, there would be a possibility there. Of course, there would be no challenge at all if you're dealing with somebody that is an investor, okay? Because remember, the investor, you know, everybody's a big boy and big girl, so you don't have to worry about whatever you can negotiate with an investor is fine when they're selling to an investor. So,
okay, that's great.
Yeah.
And that was our quandary. We thought, well, wait a minute, this is an investor.
Right.
So would that apply, or we just weren't sure. So that's great. You know,
what you got to understand is, you know, this whole thing is based on A, who you're dealing with, but you know, so the borrower is going to pay for the RMLO, you know, whether it's $1,000 or whatever it is, whatever the RMLO pays for. But if you're working with the seller on a consulting basis, then certainly I would put something together like a consulting agreement. Have them sign a non-disclosure agreement, and then do a consulting agreement that says, you know, in order for us to advise you on creating the best note, then the best note possible, then here's what we recommend, or here's what we charge for that. And if it's 1%, it's 1%. Okay.
Right.
And then the second part of that is asking them to give you a right of first refusal to buy that note, either a full or a partial, at some time in the future. Now, one of the things that you need to make sure is clearly understood is that you cannot judge what the value of a note is going to be in 6 months or 12 months or 2 years or 3 years. So you've got to make that perfectly clear that when all you're doing is you're consulting them, saying, okay, send your borrower to an RMLO. The RMLO is going to qualify that person. You're going to make the decision if they qualify as to what the terms are going to be. Now, we know those six pillars of how to value a note. So it's going to be borrower's, you know, credit and the down payment / equity. The paperwork, how was it created, pay history, all of those, you know, those pillars, the property, the value of the collateral, all of those things. So, you know, that if they're going to try to push you, well, if I decided to sell this in 6 months, what would it be worth?
Mm-hmm.
And there's where you have to be very careful. Make sense?
Okay. Yes. Yeah.
You don't know what's going to happen 6 months. You know, interest rates could go up, market could crash. The borrower may be late every month or has missed two payments and now they're not a great borrower any longer. So you really can't advise anyone as to what something is worth in the future. And so as long as you're clear about that up front, I think that, you know, you're fine. Now, if you wanted to price it and you guys wanted to buy it, that's going to be different than brokering the note to a funding source. Or if you've got an investor that may want to look at that. But again, you can't talk for an investor where you say, okay, I've got one investor that'll buy a 90-month partial or a 60-month partial on this, and they want an 8% return. And you've got another one that'll buy a 60-month partial as well, but they want a 10% return. So that's always going to be a moving target there. And I just don't want anyone to get caught making promises that they really can't keep.
No, that's fine, Joe. And we're working with an investor who's got this house, and apparently it's mortgage free.
Right.
So, you know, we're just basically we're working with her and helping her get the note done.
Right. And so again, here's the other. There's several moving parts to this also. So if you're telling them, so the house is selling for $150, or the whatever it is selling for $150. One of the first things we should tell them is what? You should get as big a down payment as you possibly can. Right. So they take a $10,000 down payment versus taking a $25,000 down payment. Well, we know that that's going to affect the value of the note because of a maximum investment to value ratio. Mm-hmm. The guy that puts down $25,000 versus $10,000, well, that's going to make a difference. And then if you advise them to sell it at an 8% rate and they sell it at a 6% rate. So until the note is created and there's been a pay history on that note, you really can't judge what it's going to be worth. And if you set up a list of investors today that say, oh yeah, I would love to buy a partial, and you've explained to them, you've created a relationship with an investor who wants to buy a partial from you, where you put that together, then that's going to be their goals may change, and you have an investor that you've cultivated, but you know they've invested in something else, and now they don't have the money, and somebody else wants a higher yield or higher return. Mm-hmm. So just make sure that you tell them that, and you have a clear understanding on that. And again, I would probably put it in my agreement saying that, hey, you know, this we are not in any way, shape or form guaranteeing you what this note will be worth 6 months from now or a year from now. Because simply there's too many moving variables that are going to affect the value of the note.
Right.
And obviously, if you're working with somebody on a 50-50 model as well, then that becomes an investor issue, and you can charge whatever the market will bear on that also. So there are several different aspects of this, but again, it's nothing more than when you're talking with a, you're making the initial conversation and you've sent them a marketing letter and now they've called you and they want to sell their note. First thing they're going to ask you is, what's it worth? Well, I don't know what it's worth. We need to talk about, you know, the six pillars of what creates a good note and so on. And then there's many other variables, different investor requirements and all of those things. So when you're ready to sell this, we will certainly work with you to get you the best price possible.
Right. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, we were just wanting to know, you know, for sure what we could do in the creation of the note to be 100% compliant. And then we were going to leave the other stuff till later when, like you say, you know, we have an idea of what's going on.
Yeah, we don't know where the house is at this point, Joe, or anything about it, but just that she has it. And we were going to talk to her last week, and we ended up having to cancel it, but probably this next week we'll be talking to her. And that'll be the initial meeting that we'll have.
Okay, good. Okay, and again, you're working in an advisory sector with them so that you can, you know, help them create something, because you know what we see on a daily basis is how badly people create a note when they're working. They won't check the borrower's credit. No, they don't make it Dodd-Frank, you know, they don't make it Safe Act compliant. They get either very little or no money down. They'll do it at 4% for 30 years. They'll do all of these things. And what our job is as an advisor to those folks is, guys, you're doing seller financing. You're offering a service, and you're offering to sell your property without the borrower having to go to a traditional lender. So it's much easier to work with us than it is with somebody else. So based on that, then, you know, you're going to be able to charge a premium as far as the interest rate. You're going to be able to maybe oversell the house a little bit. As far as sales price, it's worth $150. Can we sell it for $155 or $60? Most likely, yes, because we're doing seller financing. But that doesn't mean we're going to take $1,500 down and do it at 4% for 30 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and we intend to do it to an RNLO.
And actually, and you know, the part of that that should be exciting for most investors, where they're going to see their biggest return, is going to be showing them ceteris paribus, all things being equal, you could sell a partial for, you know, something like this, and you could talk some general numbers, but it's not this, and you got to let them know that it's not. Nothing is ever in stone. So it depends on how this note performs up until the point you want to sell that partial payment to get some cash now.
Right. And we haven't even talked to her about partials or anything.
Good.
No.
So hopefully this gives you some talking points as you're going through the process. I mean, it can certainly be an amazing thing for somebody to be able to sell their house and do seller financing. And one of the things that I'll point out is you've got a lot of people that, you know, they've especially here in Florida, they've lived up north for many years. They bought a little house in Pittsburgh for $25,000 40 years ago. They raised their kids, and now the house is worth $400,000 because it's in a great location. They owe nothing on it, and they sell the house. They get all cash. What are they going to do with it in this environment? You know, they're certainly not going to put it in the stock market. So, you know, this can be a benefit to you, Mr. Seller, because you've paid for the house. Now the house is going to pay you. So if you sell it at a 6% return, then you're going to get that payment every month. But you're not locked into that, because at some point in time, if you wanted to sell a partial on this, you could actually raise some cash if you needed cash for something, for one thing or another.
Mm-hmm.
Make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, that's great.
Thank you very much.
Very good. Let me see. I've got a couple of questions here. Is there, from Frederick, is there an appropriate NDA for the seller financing idea? I have contact with a guy who is sending me 4 to 6 properties to help with seller financing. Frederick, it should be on the website, on the member site under performing. And if you don't find it there, certainly email Zarina, Czarina, Zarina at noteschool.com, and just ask her where that is on the website there. All right, Stu, Tina, anything else going on with you?
No.
No, that answers our immediate.
We just got a few people that we're going to be talking to next week, so that'll be great.
How's it going? How's it going with the at the RIA? At REAPS. You've been there a couple of times.
Yeah, we have. Well, this is where we found this lady. She was sitting beside me at REAPS, and we just started talking near the end of it, and then we called her. But it's going quite well. We've met 3 or 4 people.
Isn't it amazing that once you get out and you start talking about your business? that people tend to be very interested in it once they start learning about it, and again, that's certainly a way to create people that want to invest in notes. So you create an investor list, and then people who have a property that they want to sell.
Right. And it was interesting, Joe. We went to the Everett meeting last week, and there was a presentation by, what was the name of that outfit?
I can't remember. Life insurance.
It's
company.
A life insurance product.
Mm-hmm.
And as we were sitting there listening to it, it was like they talk about, being the bank.
Right.
But you've probably heard about it, but it comes down to basically getting rid of all of your debt and then you becoming the bank and loaning your money from yourself.
Right.
And but the guy mentioned that, like, we had gotten up before that and we're only allowed 30 seconds of students.
That's right. 15. Do they put the timer on you?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, a lot of the REITs are doing that now. They did that in Milwaukee last week. So you get got a timer up there on the screen, and a bell rings when you're 30 seconds up. Yeah, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah. But anyway, it was interesting. So we had just mentioned notes, and then while he was doing his presentation, I was sitting there thinking, well, this is basically what we do. And, or, you know, by being the bank. And I'm sure he knew that he might get a question from us.
Right.
Because what their return is only, he said, like right now, around maybe 4%, maybe right. 5 to 7 if you're lucky. And of course, and then he interjected and said, you know, the folks here that spoke about the notes, you know, that's a good, you know,
a good system,
a good strategy. So we were thrilled to death that he called us out because I was definitely going to ask him the question. And he asked, he said, what are your interest rates? And we just indicated, well, they're higher, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just interesting because a couple of people did come over to us after that and ask us more about it. So, yeah, it really pays just to, like you say, get out there and talk about things.
That's correct, you know, and it's amazing that you would think that everybody would be that's a real estate investor would have more knowledge of notes. And then you have somebody that's, you know, this insurance company fellow that's in the financial services business, and he really doesn't have an idea as to what a note is and what that looks like. So, you know, we're pretty unique out there, and we've just got to, you know, continue to learn and up our game on every day. Okay.
Right.
Let's, while you're still on, I've got Diana Mayo. How are you, Diana? I hope you're doing well. Diana says, how might one respond to a seller who likes the idea of selling their free and clear property on a note, but are weighing against against the ability to sell the property and take the gains tax-free? You know, Diana, here's the situation. I don't think it's so much, and basically when they're, if you sell your property, for instance, let's just do a hypothetical. So you've got somebody that, again, they bought their house 40 years ago for $25,000, and now it's worth $300,000. So they can still, you know, go in that and have the tax-free gain because it was their property. And I would think, and I would have to check in deeper on this, but just because you sell it, on a mortgage and finance it, I'm thinking that interest would not be taxable anyway as you receive that because of that gain. Just because you sell or financed it, it's still part of that, so it still should be. And just understand one other thing that we can tell folks when they're selling, and maybe it was an investment property, maybe it was a vacation property that wouldn't have had this, and they're selling it, it's paid for, and they want to sell it, and they have no idea what to do with the cash. Basically, they don't want to, they're not going to put it in the market, they're going to put it in an IRA, and they're scared to death as to what the marketplace is going to do. So even if they put it in the self-directed IRA, they don't invest it. They just leave it in as uninvested cash. And we know that there's more than $50 billion sitting in uninvested cash in these, you know, with Quest IRA and Equity Trust and Camu Plan and Mid-Atlantic. I talked to all of these guys. So even if it were a taxable event, the seller, the lender on this only has to pay tax on the gain as the gain is received. So you're amortizing the loan, so you only have to pay taxes on the gain as you receive them. So you're literally amortizing your tax liability as well, if that makes sense. So hopefully, Diana, that does make sense to you, and that's another thing you can put out there. But I'm thinking that just because you sell, and you know, we've got the home, and now we have that tax-free environment that we can sell it in because it was our family home, I'm thinking that would work as well, just as well seller financing it. And the other part of that is that even if you sold an investment property and you had $100,000, you sold it for cash, you had $100,000 gain and you had to pay taxes on that long-term gain at one time. But if you financed it, you would only have to pay taxes on that gain as you received it. So anyway, so that's food for thought for you guys as we're out there looking. All right, Stu, let's see. Diana, you had, yeah, thanks. I'll check further with your, that's very good, very good. So let us know on that next call if you can when you check with them. All right, let's see. We have a question here from Charles Sullivan. And Charles says, if I buy a performing land contract, should I record it? Does the answer change if the note is a non-performing note? So Charles, you know, what we suggest is this, and we have a pretty good consensus on this in the office, is that you, if it's not recorded, then you don't record it. Unless you've got a state that it does require recording the land contract, and I know Iowa is one of those states. So if the state requires it to be recorded as a land contract, then you would do it. But if it doesn't, I know that Iowa is one. Maybe Michigan is one that requires that it be recorded, but I'm thinking that that's what it is. So we wouldn't record it unless the state requires it to be recorded. And I know Iowa is the only one I can think of right now. And if any of you have knowledge that are on the call that there are other states, my mind's just kind of, I've had a head cold for 3 days, so I'm not sure. But if anybody else knows of another state, simply type it in and I'll let everybody know. Tim, my friend from Nashville, am I wrong in understanding that you can only avoid taxes on the sale of your home if you reinvest it within 2 years? Tim, we're talking about an entirely different topic here. And that is that if you have your home and you've lived in it and you sell it, you have 2 years to buy another home for yourself. And then that has a, then of course, you, as long as you buy another home that's either, and that you're going to live in, then there wouldn't be any taxation on that. And then once you would then sell it after after you turn 65, I believe is the number on that, then it's going to become a non-taxable event as long as it's under, I can't remember if it's $500,000 or $800,000, but there's a cap on that as to how much of that would be tax-free. So, Tim, that's, again, so there's two different things there. Number one, you're 40 years old, you sell your house, you've got 2 years to reinvest in another house for yourself, or you're going to have to pay taxes on that gain. If you reach a retirement age, reach 65 years old, you sell your property, then that would be a non-taxable event as long as it was under whatever the cap is at this point. Okay. All right, let's see. We've got a question here. Don't remember who asked it, but we had a couple of questions on what an allonge really, really is. And an allonge is used on a as an endorsement. So you've got, and I just put the proper definition of allonge. And the proper definition is an additional paper firmly attached to commercial paper, such as a promissory note, to provide room to write endorsements. So what that really means is the allonge is just, there's not room on that original promissory note. So the allonge is just a document that is attached to that that promissory note, and it has to be attached to it. When they say firmly attached, I don't think they mean gluing or stapling. I mean that it goes right along with that original promissory note, and that just provides the space to put the endorsements from one to another on that. Okay, so hopefully that makes sense. And there's some sample allonges on the website also. Let's see, Mr. Jackson, can you give an explanation of why you wouldn't want to record a land contract? Mike, basically, the reasoning would be, and hold on, I hate doing all the talking here. Let me see, Mike, if you've got a microphone here, I'm going to unmute you. There you are. Hold on just a second. Hey, Mike, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hey, I just, you know, I, I'm sorry to pull you out like this, but I just think it becomes more, a lot more fun when people listen to other people instead of listening to me talk for an hour. So your question, just kind of tell us what your question is.
Well, yeah, it was a kind of follow-up question to the previous question that was asked of why you typically don't record a land contract. And I just want to know the reasons why you wouldn't do that. Is there some advantage or disadvantage? Or?
In some cases, Mike, there are people use a land contract to, if they do a wraparound contract. So you're familiar with the term wraparound. So I've got a loan that is underlying lien that's $40,000. I'm going to sell my house for $100,000, I'm going to get $20,000 down, so I want to do an $80,000 seller financed loan. Well, since I owe $40,000 to the lender, I'm creating an new $80,000 loan, which is subject to that underlying $40,000 loan. Now, if that land contract were recorded, it could trigger a due on sale clause. So that would be one of the reasons that they're not recorded, so that it wouldn't trigger a due on sale clause on a subject to type situation. Mm-hmm. So it's used for that quite a bit. Secondly, there just really isn't a good reason to record the land contract. It's just not required. So if it's not required, we just don't do it. And I wish I could give you a better explanation than that, but that's what it is.
So if I'm in first position and I record the land contract, there's not necessarily any harm in doing it.
Record the land contract, and then it becomes part of a record. Yeah.
Okay.
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 Very good. All right. What else do we have here? All right. Let's see. Okay. Any questions so far, guys? Okay. Mr. Bullinger. Hey, Bob, how are you?
Hey, Joe, I'm doing good.
Very good.
Except I had a fall from a ladder the other day, and hopefully I'll be well healed by my ski trip at the end of this month. So.
You fell from a ladder. So
stuff happens.
What were you doing climbing up on a ladder?
Well, actually,
were you climbing
That's
out the snow, Bob?
Good question. No, actually, I was just the very last thing in the day before I had to go away, and I had it started misting, and I put the ladder up, and it just slid out from under me. But I shouldn't have done it on a wet deck. That's my fault. So
yeah, I got
but,
you.
I did want to mention something on
Let me mention something to you first, Bob. So our friend Dave from Arizona, he just wrote a comment here, and I just want to read it to you. So it says, and I quote, "Bob is too old to climb on ladders."
I guess it takes one to know one, doesn't it?
And the two is a lot of O's, a T with a lot of O's.
I would have expected that from Dave.
No, I wouldn't at all, right? Okay, so Bob, what do you have?
Well, what I was listening to what you're talking, Stu and Tina, about, and you were spot on there, and I just did one of those recently at the end of January, I think it was. I had a signed agreement with an investor. They were flippers wanting to sell a house, and they had gotten some information that they knew that they could end up writing a bad note. They didn't know how to go about it. I had gotten the written agreement with them. I told them I'd charge typically $1,000 to $1,500. I offered to do it for $1,000 because they were part of our local VIA.
Mm-hmm.
And I said that, you know, I went over the six pillars, the six determinants after I had the agreement signed that define a good note, and I went into depth with them on that. I did tell them that they would need an RMLO, but they should pass, and here's the point I wanted to make, that they needed to pass the cost of that RMLO, and they did need one, to the buyer. That's their expense.
Right.
You know, whatever the RMLO is, and I suggested Pat Bilheimer, and they ultimately did contact her, and I've got a signed agreement for mine. The one thing I didn't do, I didn't have an NDA. I should have, but I did tell them that this fee here for this particular situation was only applicable on this note.
Right.
And that if they do subsequent notes that in the future, that there would be additional fees. And I didn't want them coming back to me time after time saying that you've already got money.
Right, and you're perfectly clear with them that it is just a consulting type situation, and in no way, shape, or form is it a mortgage brokerage type situation. I mean, you don't want to pull that card, and somebody then say, "Oh, well, you got to have a mortgage broker's license to do that." Well, no, that's not what we're doing.
That's exactly what I said. And I said you need to go to the professionals that can actually draw the paperwork. I'm not qualified to do that. But what I am qualified to do is to help you design a good quality note.
Exactly.
And I left it at that.
Yeah, that's exactly what you should do, Bob. I mean, again, you're not making any promises as to the your, because when somebody's thinking about selling a property and creating a note, they don't even know what anything about Dodd-Frank and the SAFE Act and all of that. And then, of course, somebody could argue and say, okay, well, I'm using my right to sell three notes a year or whatever it is, and so I don't need to qualify this borrower. And so at that point, my comment would be, oh, so you're going to sell $150,000 or a $200,000 or $50,000 house, and you're not going to do anything at all to qualify your borrower. And then secondly, if you ever wanted to sell this loan, there would not be a buyer around that would, and we're talking about a funding source, not just, you know, somebody with their IRA or whatever it is, but there wouldn't be a funding source around that would touch that loan. So there are many different variables that people need to understand when they're selling. And you don't want, I mean, just like our mountaintop lady, Bob, from, you know, a year and a half or so ago. I mean, obviously when she created that first loan in Cartersville, she had no idea. She just knew that there was she had some pain there, and she wanted to, that was the way she solved her pain point. But when you then advised her on doing the second one, then it was a little bit different, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And she did pay me for that too.
Yeah. Oh, she did pay you for it?
Yes.
Very.
Not much, but a little bit.
I got you. Well, you know what? Every little bit helps, brother. Stay on the line here for just a minute here, and I'll let you kind of walk through some of these other questions here with me, since you can be the color commentator. Let's see. Stuart and Tina also asked, we've been in contact with an investor interested in North and South Carolina. They do multifamily and shopping center. They have some performing notes they want to sell. So we know that Colonial specializes in single family only. Would you suggest a source for us who can provide the others? Thanks. Stu, Tina, I'm not sure. Let me get Brother Dave here and ask him, does FNAC, if they do commercial loans. Where's Dave on here? Here he is. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Joe. How are you?
Good. You know, Bob just said you were too old as well, so, you know.
Well, the reality is I was speaking from experience where I replicated his situation 10 years ago.
Right.
He just hasn't had the benefit of having it happen early enough to know that you don't go out and do that.
Well, here about 2 months ago, there was a house that we had bought that we were rehabbing and doing something with. And my dad is 80 years old. And the guy that was going to pressure clean the house and the roof on the house didn't show up. So I had no idea. So I'm calling my dad to check in with him. I couldn't get a hold of him. So I got kind of worried and I went looking for him. And so I get over there and he's on the top of a 2-story house, 80 years old, with a extension ladder and a pressure washer, pressure washing the top floor of that house. So, yeah, I said, you're up there and you don't even have your cell phone in your pocket if you fell or whatever it was. So anyway, I got you. I do the same thing though. I do stupid things with ladders, especially.
Yep.
Exactly. So does Fnac buy commercial paper?
I believe they do.
Okay.
I have no reason to believe they're not. They'll buy anything as long as the numbers work for them. They might discount it a lot, but they will buy it.
Yeah, and just typically, so you guys, know Stu, Tina, everybody else on the call, there is an appetite with a lot of investors for commercial paper, and here's why. If you go out and try, if you think it's difficult to go and qualify for a loan with a traditional lender to buy a residential 1-4 unit complex or whatever it is, I can promise you that it is 10 times more difficult to get a loan to buy a commercial property. So whether it's a strip center or a 10 unit or whatever it is, that's considered commercial. Typically, you're looking at about a 50% loan-to-value ratio. So that means that you're going to have to put down 50%, and you're going to have to be really, really tight. So what is happening in the commercial space right now, especially on stuff that commercial that's somewhere between or less than $1 million, less than $1.5 million. Most of that is people are having to sell or finance it when they're ready to sell that property. The answer to that is, yeah, FNAC is one of those that can do that or probably do it as long as the numbers work. And if you have something that looks interesting, that the numbers do look decent on, and I'm not talking about a strip center that somebody sold for $1 million and they put $10,000 down on it and amortized it for 50 years. I'm talking about something that's, that's got some substantial down payment. It has some good seasoning on it. It looks like a decent note. Just forward it to pricing@colonialfundinggroup.com. And if you'll copy me on that as well, just get a sample of one of their deals. And it may be, and I'm not promising anything, but it may be that Colonial would be interested in that. And if not, we may have others that are out there that would. Okay? And guys, I don't know. I haven't looked at the forum lately, but hopefully you guys are doing that. But this is kind of some of the stuff too that kind of is a peer to peer thing. If you guys found a note and you didn't know that Colonial would be interested in it, maybe it's a commercial note, post it on the forum and say, hey, is there anybody interested in buying a partial on this commercial note or whatever it is? So just remember that also. But Sue, Tina, I would certainly suggest you do that. But I would have them send you a sample of one of their notes and then play with it. See what you can see, what kind of numbers you can get on it and see if that works as well. OK, but again, the numbers have to make sense. Low down payment, very little seasoning. You've got a 10 unit apartment building and 5 of them are vacant. That type of thing. It's not going to fly with anybody. And one of the things that I will tell you that would be required by any investor on a commercial income producing property, even if it's a 4 unit, not a 10 unit, but whatever it is, you're going to need to, before somebody will quote that, you're going to need to know what the financials look like on that as far as, okay, what are the taxes? What is the income on the property? What is the What are the expenses? Do they pay for water, garbage, sewer? Do they pay for power? Is it? What are the taxes? What are the insurance? So they want to make sure that the income is sufficient to cover the debt service, is really what any investor is going to look at on any given day, because that's a specialized piece of property, and it is an income-producing piece of property versus even if you have a single-family house that is a that is used as a rental, that could always be sold as an owner-occupied home. So it's not, the income to that is not as important as when you have a multifamily or a commercial-type building. So just so you know, kind of park that in the back of your mind, because that's one of the things that most people would not ask, and that's going to be something that's going to be very important for any investor, and that is, what do the financials look like? Now, one of the questions you're always going to get, well, I've sold it to these people. They're making the payments. I don't know what their financials look like. Well, then that may be something that they're going to have to go to the borrower and say, hey, you know, we need to know, we need to know what this is. Okay. Makes sense, Bob. Makes sense, Dave.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And I have a follow-up question on Bob's consulting business.
Uh-huh.
If he helps a seller create a note, is there a conflict if he comes back later and buys that note? I've heard two different versions of that. Maybe you could clarify that.
Say that one more time. I'm sorry, Dave.
Okay. Let's say I, Bob, Joe Smith, whatever, if we work with a seller on a fee base, on a fee basis to help create a seller finance note,
right?
Is there any reason why we can't come back later and buy that note?
No, there wouldn't be any reason. Now, what I would put in that agreement is that you have first right of refusal to buy that.
That's exactly what I thought. Okay, then we're
Dave, that's nothing that you're going to be, you know, it's going to be notarized and they're guaranteeing it. But just think of it this way. If you did them a good service, you showed them how to create the note, they've been happy with it, they're going to call you first anyway. But I would just put it in writing. Can you sue them if they don't? Well, no, it's just part of, you know, part of what it is. But they're going to come back to you if you've done a good job for them. They're going to come back and say, hey, what do you think this is worth? We would like to sell, you know, we have a need for $50,000. How many payments, you know, how would that work? How would we do that? So they're probably going to come back to you anyway, but I would certainly put in there that you do have that right of first refusal.
Got it. That's exactly what I thought. Okay, thanks.
Okay. Cool. Let's see. Mark says, if you own an unrecorded land contract and the borrower files for bankruptcy, so when a borrower files for bankruptcy, one of the things that they have to do, whether it's 7 or 13, Mark, is they're going to have to put together what they owe as far as their mortgage payments, their car payment, their credit card payments, anything that they owe, they're going to have to put down so that the court system, the bankruptcy trustee, can look at that and approve all of that. So you're going to be protected either way. But yeah, I would think, and I'll have to get, you know, see what the office, what our consensus is on that in the office is. But yeah, I would go ahead and take care of that. Yeah, sure, and record that. Okay. Let's see. Marty Granoff. Thanks, Dave. He's also Marty, MartyGranoff is also a buyer on those types, on commercial types. No, just Google Marty. I don't know what his address or his phone number is, and but just Marty Granoff, Granoff. He's been around a long time. I hadn't heard that name in years, Dave, probably 20 years. But anyway. Let's see. Catherine Taylor says, I may know a group of investors who may be interested depending on what type of commercial property it is. So, Catherine, if you want to send me Stu, let me see. Hold on. How are we going to do this? Get you and Tina together and Stu. Hold on just a second. Let me facilitate this. All right. Stu, what is your, hold on just a second, let me get Catherine on here as well. Hey, Catherine, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good. Do you mind, have Stu and Tina give you their email address, and you guys exchange emails, and you guys can get together. Stu, Tina, tell me your email address again.
Stokehomes at gmail.com. That's Stokehomes at gmail.com.
Stoke, Stoke, Homes, Homes, at gmail.com.
Correct.
Very good. Okay, Catherine, if you'll kind of shoot, it's Stu and Tina Johnson, and if you will just shoot them an email, and you guys can get together and talk about that, okay?
Okay.
Thanks,
Thank
Joe.
You. Thanks, Catherine.
Thank you, Joe.
You're very welcome. Let's see, Linda, Brent, what is the question there? All right, what are the best websites for buying residential notes? Just starting to explore outside of Colonial and have found many websites. I can tell you some folks that I know are the real deal, just kind of off the top of my head. FNAC, what is FNAC's website, Dave? Dave Fernicki, unmute yourself. Anyway, let me just go ahead. Dave may have jumped off. He may be doing something else. First National Acceptance Corporation. I think they're in Michigan, so you can check them out. Armstrong Capital, Jeff Armstrong, Armstrong Capital, A-R-M-S-T-O-R-N-G. So Armstrong Capital, Jeff, Tracy Z. At Diversified Investments. She's out of Orlando. Tracy has been around a long time. She was a vice president with Metropolitan Mortgage and Securities years ago. Tracy Rewey, R-E-W-E-Y. She was her official name was Tracy Z, and then she married Fred Rewey, and now it's Tracy Z. Rewey. So Diversified Investment Services, but I can't remember the exact website, but you can Google that. And she's in Orlando, Tracy Z. Rewey. She's top notch as well. So those are three that I know of that are really good. I don't know of a lot of the other ones, but certainly if you find somebody, you know, just let us know as well. Frederick Boyd, is the NotePro Seller Financing Program active? How can I contact other mentor students who are doing this? Frederick, the best way to do that is to go to connect with other students, is to go to the forum on the member site and do it like that. And again, guys, if you're not using it, and for all of you folks that are new, the forum, which is on the website, that is a peer-to-peer thing. So you guys can post things on there, and I know that Kevin checks into it and Zarina checks it occasionally. But if you've got a question, you know, in content, send it to content, obviously. But if you have something that you want to get the opinion or work with some of the other students on that, certainly you can do that as well by going to the forum. The question about the NotePro seller financing program being active, I'm pretty sure that it is, and I know that we're working. Kevin and Eddie both have been working very diligently on this on the 50-50 model, putting a tremendous amount of time and effort into that as well. I don't know. I think that's going to be ready here within the next 60 days on the 50-50 part of that, but just kind of keep checking in. And again, if you can't find something on the website, please just email Zarina, Czarina at noteschool.com, and she'll be happy to point you in the right direction. I'm not as up on that as Zarina and Kevin are as well. David Meeker says, does it matter if you rebuy in your self-directed IRA? Let's see. Let me unmute you and let's talk about that. Linda says, I've checked the forum regularly, but it seems to be rarely used. Is there a way to get notification of the post? Linda, that's going to be a Zarina question. And guys, I know that I haven't talked about it in a long time. So again, please, you know, use that forum. It was set up for you guys to kind of kind of meet and exchange your information. If you're looking for something, if you have something you want to sell, if you want to know what somebody else's opinion is, or if they've had the same type experience that you have, that type of thing, please, it only works if you guys use it. It shouldn't be, it's not something that we're going to go in and post things on unless it's something that's important to the group. But again, use that member forum. It's been set up for a while now, and so make sure that happens. So David, you said, does it matter if you rebuy in your self-directed IRA? David, I'm assuming that what you're asking is that if you are the consultant on how to set up that loan, does it matter if 6 months from now or a year from now, your people that you've consulted with decide to sell a partial? Can you buy that partial inside of your IRA? And I certainly don't see anything, any challenges there, as long as it's not your father or your mother or your son or your daughter, which would, be a prohibitive transaction, as long as it's an arm's length transaction and you run it by your custodian with your IRA, sure, okay? I don't think that wouldn't be really a conflict of interest. So, I think it would be fine. All right, Dave, Bob, any final closing thoughts on today's content?
I think you did an excellent job.
Well, thank you.
I also don't think there'd be any conflict there.
No, I don't think so, because you put in the first right of refusal. They can feel free. If you pass on it, they can go somewhere else. But again, all you're doing is kind of helping yourself build some an annuity for business down the road. You're not making them any promises as up front as to what the value of their note is. So I can't see any, like I said, as long as it's not a family member that, would cause it to be a prohibitive transaction. So, okay. So where are you going skiing, Bob?
Sunday River, Maine.
Very good.
With about 35 of my closest friends.
Good. Well, you guys, certainly be careful. Let us know how the trip goes, and I look forward to seeing you guys. Listen, Summer Summit is going to be coming up in June. Go to the member site and check out the details on that. So make sure you're doing that as well. If any of you are interested in going on the hog hunt, and I'm not sure when that is, I think it's in April, you can certainly do that. And then I know that Martha Speed is going to be having the ladies mastermind sometime in the near future as well. So all of that is on there are links on the website to go in there and check that out and see what it looks like. All right, everybody. Thanks so much for being on the call today. I appreciate each and every one of you. Stay out there and stay engaged. And just remember, there can't be any progress without change, guys. So we want to make 2016 as the best and banner year that we need for it to be. Goodbye, everybody. Talk to you next week. Take care.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you, Bob. Bye-bye.